Oldies 101.3.
Hi, DXers. Phil Wayne here for Market Scope, a monthly peek into radio markets across this great continent and occasionally beyond. Last time, I said we'd be going to Lansing, Michigan, unless I got a better offer. And so it happened I got a better offer. And also this month, a Market Scope first. Tony Simon of Fort Myers, Florida, sent his Market Scope on a recordable CD. So here's a very digital Tony Simon with a look at Fort Myers AM band.
About halfway between Tampa and Miami, on the west coast of Florida, lies one of Florida's hottest tourist destinations. Hot spots like Sanibel Captiva, Fort Myers Beach, and Marco Island are located within its limits. And aside from being a haven for sun and fun, this part of Florida is also regarded as one of the fastest growing population centers in the U.S. Welcome to Radio Market Number 70. Fort Myers, Naples, Florida. For its medium size, the area nevertheless is home to a rather large number of broadcast signals, with most being on FM. We'll take a listen to most of those stations here, starting with the AM band, which for years in this area began all the way down at 1240. That all changed in 1984 with the sign-on of middle-of-the-road 770 WKZY in North Fort Myers. Over the years, AM 770 went through several call letter and format changes. Country, oldies, hard rock, and tourist information, ultimately becoming WWCN, the CN standing for the CNN headline news format the station tried in the early 90s. At the time this recording was made, WWCN was mostly a simulcast of sports talk WQAM in Miami, and, in a case of misleading call letters, called itself 770 QAM.
Talking sports every night till the last game ends with Ed Kaplan on Southwest Florida's Sports Radio 770 QAM.
Now, supposedly after this recording was made, WWCN 770 dropped its simulcast with WQAM and switched to ESPN Radio. The next spot on the AM band takes us to Port Charlotte, located in the northern end of the market. WKII 1070 runs adult standards from the Westwood One network.
Where our local news keeps you current, our weather forecasts keep you dry, and our music keeps you singing. WKII.
It's WINKAM in Pine Island Center. In the mid-80s, the frequency signed on as AM stereo oldie station WDCQ. It later went talk and dropped the stereo, eventually changing its calls to WTLQ. A frequency swap not too long ago would put WTLQ on 1240 and move WINKAM from that frequency to 1200. And while we're here, it's also interesting to note that WINK's city of license, Pine Island Center, is not an actual community. Rather, it's literally the center of Pine Island. WINKAM is simulcast in the southern portion of the market on WNOG 1270 in Naples. Here's what Wink and WNOG sound like.
And then log on to Hotwire and see how much more you can save with a specially negotiated Hotwire hot fare.
It's 1230. Good afternoon. I'm Matt James, filling in for Ray DeLuna with Southwest Florida's news on Wink WNOG. Here's what's happening at this hour. A 600-foot barge is stuck at the mouth of the Caloosahatchee River.
1240 is the frequency of Fort Myers' first radio station, a station which for many years was a rarity on 1240. It was a station on a graveyard channel with a directional antenna system. The station has since changed, however, to non-directional. As for call letters, the frequency started its life off as WFTM, but had been known, for the most part, as WINK, that is, until a recent frequency swap. 1240 is now the home of Smart Talk WTLQ.
The better we prepare, the safer we can all be.
This message is brought to you by the Florida Department of Community Affairs, Florida Association of Broadcasters, and this radio station.
It's not just talk, it's Smart Talk. AM 1240 WTLQ.
Natalie, are you there?
I am.
And Natalie, how may I serve you?
Well, first of all, I really enjoy listening to your show.
1350 is home to Spanish religious WCRM or Radio Manantial.
Oramos por los hermanos que se deciden apoyar este ministerio con una ofrenda
mensual, y queremos que también tú también seas parte de esos que se unen a apoyar el Ministerio de Radio Manantial. Padre, gracias por los hermanos que gedeones que apoyan, Señor, con su ofrenda este ministerio.
1410 WMYR was for many years Fort Myers AM pop music station. There was a change in the 80s to country, and more recently another format change. WMYR is now Fort Myers home for Radio Disney.
Hi, this is Weird Al Yankovic, and how many of my songs did you name because Radio Disney is back?
AM 1410 WMYR Fort Myers.
Woo-hoo! Hello from Walt Disney World, guys. It's me, BB Good, doing double.
1440 WWCL Lehigh Acres is Energia 1440, the Fort Myers area's secular Spanish language station. Its studio was recently vandalized, leaving the station off the air for about a week. Luckily, they replaced their broadcast equipment and came back on the air. Here's what they sound like.
Energía 1440, hola, ¿qué tal? Muy buenos días. Saludándote, Carlos Donis, hoy en este día martes. Estamos a martes el día de hoy, ¿verdad? Hoy es el día de los difíciles.
The station that was too far for us to record, but is nevertheless a part of the Fort Myers market, is 1490 WAFZ in Immokalee. WAFZ simulcasts with 590 WAFC in Clewiston and provides Spanish language radio to Immokalee and Naples. At 1580 is WCCF Punta Gorda, Florida, serving the Port Charlotte area further north of Fort Myers with news and talk.
Paul Harvey, three times a day. Your Paul Harvey station in Southwest Florida is News Radio 1580 WCCF.
Yeah, I think, ladies and gentlemen, you'll find as we get into this that there is a link between embryonic stem cell research and cloning.
Since I was vacationing in the Sanibel Captiva area, I thought I'd point out the island's only broadcast band station, the TIS on 1610, broadcasting from the J.N. Ding Darling National Wildlife Refuge.
This is the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service broadcasting on AM frequency 1610. This station is broadcasting from the J.N. Ding Darling National Wildlife Refuge on Sanibel Island, Florida.
Welcome to the J.N. Ding Darling National Wildlife Refuge. This refuge is one of over 530 national wildlife refuges administered by the United States Fish and Wildlife Service. As part of the largest system of lands and water in the world set aside for wildlife conservation, this refuge is host to 230 species of birds, as well as alligators, raccoons, river otters, bobcats, and small marine life of the mangrove estuary.
There's another TIS on 1640 serving visitors and residents in the Fort Myers Beach area.
You're listening to Fort Myers Beach Information Radio on 1640 AM. Fort Myers Beach is located on a sterile island, home to some of the most beautiful scenery in the United States. A variety of wildlife lives on and near the island and in Estero Bay. This radio station will assist you in ways to enjoy and respect the wildlife and its habitat.
One of the certain things about radio is change, and this next frequency would prove it to us while I was vacationing in the Fort Myers area. When I first arrived at South Seas Resort in Captiva, 1660 WMIB sounded like this.
Take us with you everywhere for unforgettable music. We're 1480 WODX and 1660 WMIB.
And now, the end is near, and so I face the final curtain.
Adult standards from ABC Radio simulcast over 1,000-watt WODX 1480 in Marco Island. On August 4, that would all change. WODX 1480 continued with adult standards, while WMIB 1660 went business talk. Now, a few days later, another change. Both WODX and WMIB were doing business talk, and that's when I got this ID.
1480 WODX, the vacation station. 1660 WMIB, where money talks. Marco Island, Naples, Bonita Springs.
Now, just when I thought everything had settled down, I turned on my radio as I was driving back home to Miami. WODX 1480 was once again doing standards, and WMIB 1660 was still doing business talk. Talk about change.
Thanks, Tony, for an outstanding job of updating us radio buffs on what AM radios sound like in Fort Myers. Tony will be back next month with a look at the FM side. If you'd like to profile your market or send us air checks of a truly outstanding radio station, here's my address. Phil Wayne, 1872 Myers Road East, Marion, Ohio 43302-9160. I and all the membership would truly appreciate your contribution. Now here are the musings from the members.
This is Musings of the Members. Members may muse by calling the Action Line at 419-224-1609, 24 hours a day.
This is Tim Hendel in Huntsville. I particularly enjoy Bruce Conti's technical articles. I really, really like the article on the U antenna. But I would like to make a suggestion. I would like to know when Bruce is demonstrating something, if we're hearing daytime or nighttime reception or sort of in-between time reception. So a time check before each sample would really be appreciated. I would also like to know, if you don't put the resistor at one end of the U, does that then make it bi-directional if you wanted to hear stations both from the east and the west? I would like to congratulate everybody, Fred and John and Bruce and Ken, and I'm not even going to mention any more names. 17 years, I've been with it since the first year, though not the first issue, and I love the magazine. I also want to pay my tribute to Johnny Lombardi of CHIN. I was learning Italian in college, and when I'd go home for vacation, I would tune my radio to 1540 and practice my Italian with Johnny Lombardi and his colleagues. So I remember him, and I appreciate him. I think one of the most confusing things to most of us is this whole business of city of license and when a station changes its city of license. Now, I understand that a lot of stations get their original license to a small town or a suburb, presenting the claim, usually fraudulent, that they're going to serve that little town that has no radio stations. Then they move to a big city, which is where they really want to be in the first place. But what I would like to know is, why would a station do the opposite? We had two examples on the April DX audio service. Waco, Texas, moving to Burleson, which I never heard of, and Princeton, New Jersey. Now, according to Glenn Hauser, they moved down the road because they really want to serve Philadelphia. So let's focus on Waco. Why would a station move its city of license from a city to a small town, and what do they actually have to do? Do they have to actually move something, a transmitter or a studio, or commit themselves to more local programming for that small town? And I don't understand that last part, because hardly any stations have local programming anymore. And finally, I would like to say 10-plus to Mark Durenberger for his article on coils and capacitors and coupling an antenna. That was a wonderful article, and I plan to write to Mark about it.
Hello, everybody. I'm a DX audio service. This is John German, new to the medium, from Elmira Heights, New York. I just want to let everybody know that I am enjoying the magazine monthly. I finally started getting them this last Tuesday. And also the fact that I got started way back in 1954, back when I was in school in Batavia, New York State School for the Blind, along with one of our other DX members, whom I was zooming with at the time, Tim Hendel, whom we all know. And he's the one that taught, you know, about the frequencies and so forth. I enjoy doing DXing myself. Only thing is, I have to use whatever radios that I do have. I do not have expensive equipment. The 73s, good DX.
Greetings, DXers. This is Camille Pacheca from Wethersfield, Connecticut. WCCCAM at 1290 is now WTMI. Radio Beethoven. It's wonderful. CCCAM had been hard rock, and then it became Beethoven Radio, and now it is WTMI, which is Beethoven Radio, and I love it. It's wonderful. Thank you. Bye.
Hi, Fred and DX Audio Service members. This is Ginger Harms from New York. I've got good news for anybody that follows NASCAR, the Winston Cup Series. If you're in the New York City area, tune your radio on Sunday afternoons to 6:20 a.m., and you'll get the feed from the Motorsports Radio Network. And let the station know that you like it and you listen to it, because you know what happens in the New York area. We get about as much respect like NASCAR as chopped liver, okay? Bye.
This is Tim Hendel sitting outdoors in the Alabama sunshine with two changes around here. WSM in Nashville has dropped ABC News, and they now have CBS News. That makes me happy because I like CBS better than ABC. They've also dropped Paul Harvey, or else they've moved him, and I can't find him. I've checked them and WLAC and WWTN, which is Nashville's talk station on FM at 99.7, and none of them seem to have Paul Harvey, so I don't know where he has gone. And we have a new format here in Huntsville, WTKI on 1450, playing Classic Country Is No More. They are now WHOH. They stand for the Heart of Huntsville, and they are what they're calling Relationship Radio, Talk Radio. WTKI had traditionally carried our AA baseball team, the Huntsville Stars. I don't know if they'll still be doing that or not.
Hello, fellow DXers. Wayne Ryan in Brantford, Ontario. In answer to my friend in the Carolinas, that is a Justice J-U-S-T-I-C-E antenna that's improving my reception so well. You can call the Sea Crane Company at 1-800-522-8863, and they'll send you a catalog. And if you are blind, as I am, they'll send it to you on tape at no charge, and then you can transact your business with them, and I'm sure you'll be very happy. I'm sorry to hear that WPHT is not carrying the Phillies games this year. I don't know which station got them. WIP might have almost more than they can chew. They've got the Flyers and the Eagles and the 76ers, but I'm sure our friend Ken Honestchuck will have more information about that on the May tape. Also, back to my friend in North Carolina, the station on 640 that's country is over in East Tennessee near the Virginia line. It's about Johnson City or Bristol, somewhere in there. I have, on occasion, picked it up. And there's been a change up here with the Blue Jays, too. They were on Chum for a few years, and now the Fan 590, CJCL, just reacquired them. And they did it at the last minute. We didn't get any spring training broadcast because of it. But Tom Cheek and Jerry Howarth are back there doing their always great job. I noticed the Yankees went to WCBS, and I wonder what happened to Michael Kay, a good announcer. He's not back with them this year. Charlie Steiner, who had been with ESPN, another very good announcer, is over there with them. And Dan Shulman, I'm enjoying very much on the ESPN games. He was up here with the Blue Jays on TV for quite a few years. He's a very fine announcer.
Hi, Fred. This is John Bowker, and I wanted to take a crack at Tim Hendel's interesting question on this month's Musing Line. Tim asked, what qualifies a station city of license? And, you know, maybe before I start, I should reintroduce myself a little. Yeah, sure, I collect air check station breaks, but in my professional life, before I retired in 1987, for many years I was responsible to the National Broadcasting Company and RCA, for seeing that each of the stations they owned were properly licensed and were generally behaving themselves. And quite honestly, for most of our stations, that was duck soup, since they operated with lots of power and served major metropolitan areas. We had a little trouble in Washington. I think maybe you remember that, because in those days, the power limit on our 980 station was 5,000 watts, and a slight move of our AM transmitter site further out of town would have cost us the right to identify our flagship station, WRC, as being in the city of Washington, and that wouldn't have done at all. But at least during my tenure, we were able to keep the existing transmitter site, even as developers built around us, and it all worked out fine. However, I did get to learn the FCC rules pretty well. And at least for the specific question you raised, Tim, maybe I can paint a picture for you. Let me try. Now, as I go through this, you can follow right along by going on the Internet anytime. Go to www.fcc.gov, and type in a request for each rule section as I mention it, because there are several. Let's start with what brings this all up in the first place, and that, of course, is the requirement for identifying each radio station on the air. The rule section is 73.1201, and it's Part B. It's titled Content of Station Identification. And what it says is this: official station identification shall consist of the station's call letters immediately followed by the community or communities specified in its license as the station's location. Okay, so we have to find out how to determine a station's location, and for that we turn to FCC Rule Section 73.1120. And that reads as follows: each AM, FM, and TV broadcast station shall be licensed to the principal community or other political subdivision which it primarily serves. Well, now, we have to wonder what they mean by primarily serves, and for that, we turn to FCC Rule Section 73.1125, and it says, each AM, FM, and TV broadcast station shall maintain a main studio within the station's principal community as defined in 73.24, Part I. Okay, I'm game. Let's look at 73.24, Part I. That applies only to the AM stations in this place. And what we find it saying is this: for all stations, the daytime 5 millivolt per meter signal contour must encompass the entire principal community to be served. Now, 5 millivolt per meter signal is pretty strong. I mean, that's what you would call an ultra-local. And so there we are. And to summarize, the station must identify itself hourly by broadcasting its call sign, followed by the name of the principal community within which the signal of at least 5 millivolts per meter is present. If a station covers more than one such community, Tim, it has to pick one for its license, and that's usually the largest one available, but not in every case. So to answer your question, no, a station can't just wake up some morning and decide to ID as being in some other city. It has to apply for a change in any such thing to the FCC and wait for its approval before doing anything. Now, one last thing, Tim, because I think we're almost done, and I hope I've answered your question, but I was greatly interested to read on a little further in 73.24, which requires, for stations in the 535 to 1605 kilohertz band, 80% of the principal community is encompassed by the nighttime 5 millivolt per meter contour or the nighttime interference-free contour. And for stations in the 1605 to 1705 kilohertz band, 50% of the principal community must be encompassed by the 5 millivolt per meter contour or the nighttime interference-free contour, whichever is higher. You want to play that back 6 or 8 times and then call me back and explain it? Anyway, you know, there are even additional special provisions for stations operating on clear channels at night but using very low power. They call them Class D stations. And we could go into that sometime. We'll have to chat about this some more, Tim. I can see it. I'll see you in Lima over the Labor Day weekend. So long now. 89
WLS. Hello again, DXers. Ken Beck here. And this edition, I have Major League Baseball flagships to report, an Olympic wrap-up report from Tim Cronin, and just a few Arbitrons this time around. So let me get right into it. In the American League, the Anaheim Angels on 570 KLAC. In case of a conflict with the Lakers, most likely the Lakers will come first and Anaheim will go elsewhere. And in Spanish, 1090 XPRS in Rosarita, Baja California. Baltimore Orioles, 1090 WBAL. Boston Red Sox in English, 850 WEEI. In Spanish, 1360 WLYN in Lynn. Chicago White Sox, 1000 WMVP ESPN Radio with John Rooney and Ed Farmer. Cleveland Indians, 1100 WTAM. Conflict with the Cavaliers. I think the Cavaliers go elsewhere. Detroit Tigers on 1270 WXYT. And this is the last year on the air for 83-year-old Ernie Harwell, who is retiring after the season. Kansas City Royals, 980 KMBZ. Milwaukee Brewers on 620 WTMJ. And considering the Bucks are in first place in the NBA, I think that the Brewers will go elsewhere when there's a conflict. Announcers, of course, will be Bob Uecker and Jim Powell. The Minnesota North Stars, Twins, thank you. 830-WCCO, happened to catch a little bit last night. Herb Carneal, John Gordon, and somebody else that they will do play-by-play. It might be their last year in existence, the way talk is going. The Oakland Athletics have moved from 960 last year to 610 KFRC. Seattle Mariners, 710 KIRO. Conflicts with the Supersonics. I believe the Supersonics get moved since they're not going in the playoffs too far anyway. The Tampa Bay Lightning, 970 WFLA, John Bucker's territory. The Texas Rangers in English, 1080 KRLD. And in Spanish on 1270 KESS. Toronto Blue Jays, 1050 CHUM. American League, Arizona Diamondbacks, the champions. In English, 620 KTAR. In Spanish, 107.9 KMLE in Chandler. The Atlanta Braves on 750 WSB in English. And conflicts with the Hawks. I believe the Hawks go elsewhere since they're pretty low in the standings. In Spanish, 1100 WWWE in Hapewell. I remember those former calls in Cleveland years ago. The Chicago Cubs, 720 WGN only. Well, I mean, there's no Spanish at least here. Cincinnati Reds, their 27th year on 700 WLW with Marty Brenneman and Joe Nuxhall. Colorado Rockies on 850 KOA. The Florida Marlins, 560 WQAM. Conflict with the Miami Heat. I think the Heat will go to either 790 WAXY or 610 WIOD. Thank you there, Mike Lance. Houston Astros, 740 in English, KTRH. And in Spanish, 100.7 KRTX in Winnie. Los Angeles Dodgers, 1150 KXTA, which is Fox Sports Radio, and in Spanish, 1330 KWKW. Montreal, in English, probably their last year in existence, on 990 CKGM, known as the Team, and in French at 730 CKC. I did just notice this some time ago, yesterday when I was doing this. I forgot the New York Yankees, and I believe they're on 770 WABC, but I'm not positive on that. I got caught up in a few other things while digging this stuff up, and the New York Mets will be on 880 WCBS, which... Me being about 10 miles away from the WLS transmitter is going to make it very difficult. And in Spanish on 1280 WADO. Of course, corrections are always welcome in this column. The Philadelphia Phillies have greatly reduced their coverage area. They've dropped 1210 WPHT and moved to 950 WPEN. The Pittsburgh Pirates, 1020 KDKA. San Diego Padres, English, 600 KOGO, and in Spanish, 1040 KURS. San Francisco Giants on 680 KNBR, conflict with the lowly Golden State Warriors. Golden State goes elsewhere, I think. And in Spanish, 1370 KZSF in San Jose. The St. Louis Cardinals, 1120 KMOX. Okay. Next, I have an Olympic roundup for you. And this came from local columnist Tim Cronin. Postcard views and magic moments are expected on TV going into the Olympics. NBC did okay. The network's coverage was generally superb, better than the load of taped action in Sydney. 2 years ago. This time around, more than Bob Costas and one basketball game was alive. Not enough, not any alpine skiing, but it was an improvement. That allowed timely coverage of the great pair's figure skating controversy and other news off the rinks and mountains. The primetime shows were stitched together effectively. Costas to a smoothie, Jim McKay added insight and class once he thawed out from the opening ceremony, and most of the event commentators knew their stuff. Special kudos to bobsled analyst John Morgan, tension in his voice in every run. He knew every pacer's tendency, every inch of the track, got his point across with an economy of words. Tom Hammond hit a grand slam when he said, "Sally Hughes just brought down the house after her golden skate." Sidekick Scott Hamilton and Sandra Bezic instantly cried bloody murder when Jamie Sale and David Pelletier were robbed in pairs, and they turned out to be right. On cable, Jim Lampley hosted 11 hours of live NBC-produced coverage daily between MSNBC and CNBC and never looked bleary-eyed. Nobody can make the world of Nordic skiing more interesting than master of obscure sports Al Trutwig. Profiles were shorter and better than in Sydney, focusing on the person rather than the struggle so common to all of us. The action-to-fluff ratio was better. A gold medal to NBC, sure, but on scores of 5.8 for technical merit and 5.6 for artistic impression, there was room for improvement. Viewers with a choice on the U.S.-Canada border, for instance, might award NBC only a silver behind Canada's CBC, which was on for about 15 hours a day, mostly live. NBC Olympics boss Dick Ebersol still hasn't gotten a complete grip on this live versus tape thing. Allow us to explain why he was by harping on the lack of live alpine skiing for two or more paragraphs. Perhaps worse, the tape packages so enthusiastically called by Tim Ryan and Kristen Cooper didn't have enough skiing in them. Take the first weekend when NBC had no network programming when the men's downhill was taking place. When prime time rolled around, NBC showed 10 skiers. 10. This one, American's Mark Sullivan, last to be shown, scooted down the hill. He was wearing bib number 31. Plenty was left behind on the cutting room floor. It's beyond expectation to show everyone, especially the also-rans liberally placed at the back of the field of 54, but there were more than 10 contenders slash Americans. North of the border, CBC showed 30 of the first 31. NBC could have done the same and run its tape package in prime time. NBC had a real problem with Sundays. The first Sunday, the schedule featured no live prime time action. The second, there was no afternoon broadcasting. It's one thing to show the Daytona 500, but a regular season NBA game? Talk about bad scheduling? Hockey was moved to cable to protect the ratings, but couldn't NBC boss Ebersol have arranged for the U.S.-Russia semifinal game to go live in prime time? He already arranged for the U.S. to play the late semifinal no matter what we did, but moving most of it to CNBC didn't make sure and failed, built on the good 7.2 late-night rating for the U.S.-Russia game the previous Saturday. Canadians may disagree, but Ebersol may not grasp it, but Russia is still the big rival of U.S. in hockey. At least like 1960 on CBS, and unlike 1980 on ABC, there was an outlet for live coverage. But we quibble. Its pictures and moments that are the best remembered from any grand event in the Olympics are no exception. NBC delivered. The best pictures were seen by comparatively few. NBC's high-definition coverage of the games on a one-day delay basis, because it was also seen on satellite-fed HDNet, was absolutely breathtaking. NBC and HDNet combined for 8 dazzling hours a day of HDTV from figure skating, hockey, speed skating, and ski jumping, plus the opening and closing ceremonies. The detailed depth and field and range of color was tremendous. Maybe by 2004, it'll be live from Athens, Greece. There was even magic in NBC studios. When Hughes was interviewed on Saturday, she told McKay and Costas, "I love the thrill of victory." Costas couldn't help it. "And the agony of defeat?" he quizzed. To which McKay, who authored the phrase in 1961, said, "That's a great line. Did you just make that up?" It was priceless, as was McKay, who had interviews and told Hughes, "The last time I did an Olympics, you were 2 years old. For 2 weeks, we were all kids again." And to finish up quickly now, let me get to some ratings before my time runs out here. Mark at 16, Austin, Texas at 656,000. Number one country, KASE 7.3, down 1.4. Number three, News Talk, KLBJ 6.3, up 6 tenths. And 15th, Sports Radio, KVET 2.3, up 0.4. 17th, Baltimore at 651,000. Number one, Current Hits, WERQ 7.9, down 1.7. And second place, Strong, News Talk 1090, WBAL 7.3, up 0.4. Market 18, Memphis, 650,000. Number one, Black Adult, WHRK, 7.4, up 0.7. Two, Black Adult, 1070, WDIA, 7.3. And way down to 23rd, Sports Radio 560, WHBQ, 0.8. Market 19th, Milwaukee, 597,000. Perennial number one, WTMJ, 620, 10.7, down 3 tenths. Two, Black Adult, WKKVFM, 7.2, down 0.2. 5, Standards 920, WOKY, 5.9, up 0.3. 11th, Talk Radio 1130, WISN, 4.9, down 0.3. 16th, Black Adult 1290, WMCS, 1.7. 17th, Black Adult, 860, WNOV, 1.5. And a few Chicagoans were really tossed in there. By the way, Local 19th, Sports Radio 1510, WAUK, 0.9. And finally, Boston, the 20th market, 589,000 there. Number one, News Talk 1030, WBZ, 8.7, up 1.1. The next were FMs. Then 9th, 680, WRKO, 3.9. 12th, Sports Radio, 850, WEI, 3.1, down 1.2. And the Celtics on WZN weren't even listed. And St. Louis, KMOX down there, number one, about 12%. 13th, KTRS 550, 3.4 down 1. And KATZ, one of the Voice of the Rams, 3.1. And that's it. My time is out. Thanks for having me on. And we'll hopefully get more next month. Any changes, give me a call. 815-774-0184. Love to hear from you. Take her away, Fred.
There has been some questions from members about reviving the Air Check Collector's Corner. Hey, I'm willing to give it a go. For those of you that did not participate in this column several years ago, here's how this works. You can either send me a short list or call the action line with the contents of one or two tapes that you would like to trade. Then give a brief description of what you are looking for. And finally, give your name and contact information. This should be no more than 30 seconds in length. For example, here's how I would present a tape in my collection. Hi, DX Audio Service members. This is Fred Vobey. I have a C90 tape with an air check of the real Don Steele on KRLA from April 3rd, 1985 on one side and Shotgun Tom Kelly on KBZT from April 3rd, 1985 on side B. I'm looking for air checks of good personality oldies or adult contemporary formatted stations, past or present. Please contact me at Box 5031, Lima, Ohio, 45802. By the way, I should also mention that you can still post classifieds on the DXChange. This column is where you can buy, sell, or trade items. Send your list by mail or email, and it will be read on the next magazine to be published. If you're a National Radio Club member, you can also post it on our email list, dxc@nrcdxas.org.
You're listening to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service.
The Federal Communications Commission is asking for questions on IBOC, or in-band, on-channel, digital transmissions on the AM radio band. We've had a lot of email exchanges on the AM at nrcdxas.org email list, both pro and con. I have to say, as an engineer, I was impressed with the results of the DRM tests on HF, but I am disappointed with IBOC, and specifically the potential for interference to adjacent channel stations caused by the digital transmission. What does it sound like? Well, let's suppose that you live in Cincinnati, Ohio, and WLW is running IBOC. While you would get a lot of splatter from their AM transmission, DXing on 680, 690, 710, and 720 would be possible at times. If WLW would use IBOC, then there would be a noise, which sounds like a spot on the FM radio where there's no station, which would then cover up the weak signals on 680, 690, 710, and 720. Unfortunately, due to the technical quality of most radio receivers and the fact that digital is being transmitted along with the analog, the interference potential is great. Therefore, in the theater of my radio shack, I would give thumbs down for now. Perhaps it would be better to put a digital AM station in another portion of the spectrum, say perhaps long wave, call it Damoff, digital AM on another frequency. Anyway, the Federal Communications Commission is requesting comments on the NRSC's evaluation of the Ubiquiti Digital Corporation's IBOC system. This public notice the FCC is seeking comments on is the NRSC's report, conclusions, and recommendations concerning the Ubiquiti Hybrid Mode AM IBOC Digital Transmission System, as well as Ubiquiti's AM IBOC test results. Interested parties may file comments on or before June 18th of 2002, and reply comments are before July 18th, 2002. If you don't know how to write comments or replies in these matters, please contact me and I'll send you some notes and samples of comments. Speaking of digital, Victor Schmidt from the Schmidt House in Silver Springs, Maryland wrote the following. Fred, enclosed are some questions concerning digital television. What tests have been done to determine if the digital TV signals can be received? The $64,000 question is, will I be able to DX them? If I understand, the analog channels will sign off in the year 2006, and the digital channels will be on UHF. What will happen to VHF channels 2 through 13? How expensive will the new receivers be? Can I buy a converter box for an old TV? Well, Victor, there's been a lot of misinformation on digital television. First of all, let's address the issue of analog stations going away. I don't think that we'll see analog go away for a long, long time. Congress was very optimistic about digital television and how the public would embrace it. Congress has many grandiose ideas, but they forget that business and the public are the ones that fund the change and do not have the checkbooks that Congress has with a money tree attached to keep the balance in the black. First of all, understand that a television station will not want to turn off their analog channel unless their viewing public has transitioned over to digital. Further, the law says that they can stay on analog at least until 85% of the public in the viewing area has stopped using analog sets, and they are now watching on digital sets. So the short answer here is, in gazing into my crystal ball, I see analog around until 2015. As far as sets, since Christmas of 2001, I've watched the stores for digital televisions. Although I have found, quote, digital ready, unquote, and, quote, digital monitors, unquote, I've yet to find a set that has a tuner in it capable of receiving an off-the-air 8 VSB transmitted signal. 8 VSB is the modulation method used to transmit digital television. I have seen test receivers demoed by the manufacturers, but nothing for the public. However, I have seen some converter boxes for digital. Additionally, there's a neat little card that is installed in a computer to view digital television. Jeff Cadet has some screenshots that he has made from reception of digital television stations at the following website, http://pages.cthome, that's C-T-H-O-M-E, .net/fmdx/hdtv.html. That's all small letters. What Jeff is using is a card in his computer and software that runs on a Windows platform. The WinTV-D board for PCs uses Windows 95, 98, or NT. Hopog Corporation claims it is the first digital television receiver board for PCs that allows the reception, decoding, and display of all 18 ATSC formats in a resizable window on the PC display. It also includes a AC3 Dolby Digital audio decoder with outputs for up to 5 speakers. It is also able to receive analog TV broadcasts. By the way, Jeff is a DXer and has received many stations at his Macomb, Illinois home, including Detroit, Michigan, Chicago, Illinois, and Madison, Wisconsin. So yes, Victor, you can DX digital television. You can read more about the WinTV-D card at Hopog's site. That's http://www.haupaugee.com. There are also some converter boxes out on the market, manufactured by Toshiba, Panasonic, and others. However, I've not seen any reviews, pro or con, about the performance of these items. Costs of these boxes can range from $350 to $999. Finally, on the channel issue, when digital television was first proposed, the plan was to transition all stations into the core channels of channel 14 through 54. It didn't take too long for people to figure out that you can't fit 20 pounds of beans into a 10-pound sack. Slowly, stations postured for different places in existing spectrum. For example, the station that I work at, WLIO Television in Lima, Ohio, is on channel 35 analog. We were to go to channel 20, but found a better channel, channel 8. Channel 20 will then be used by Bowling Green State University for their station, WBGU, which was to go to channel 57, which was out of the core of channels initially proposed. Some stations will use their DTV channels, then give them up and take digital back to their old analog channel when analog is obsolete. Some will stay on the new digital channels, and the old analog channels will simply go away. What has crippled digital at the moment has been the economy and non-public acceptance. With stations facing costs of $750,000 to $10 million to put a station on, and then have just a handful of viewers, mostly the curious, there has been not a lot of incentive at the time when businesses are struggling. One other issue I should point out, there is concern by stations over how the signal will get to the public. There is no mandate at the present time for a cable company to carry a digital station on their system. So initially, stations will have to depend on the public to erect antennas to pick up digital stations. Most people are unwilling to put up an antenna. Also keep in mind that digital is not the same as high definition. Digital is the transmission platform. The picture ratio and sound can differ based on the program content sent by the station. While some programs like The Tonight Show and others are available in a 16:9 formatted picture and 5.1 surround sound, over 90% of the content will not be widescreen and CD quality audio. However, digital does improve the path of the transmission. Therefore, it is a plus for broadcasters. So, Victor, there is some light at the end of the tunnel. Some broadcasters see it as a train. Others look at it as a new beginning. For now, I would not worry about analog TV going away. I would not have a problem with buying an analog set. And if you want to have fun with digital, look at the Hopog computer card or search for a converter box. By the way, for antennas, I would recommend looking at some of the ChannelMaster VHF and UHF antennas.
WDSO-FM.
Well, back here inside the edit booth, we have just enough time to say, this tape is being mailed on April the 29th. That's it. That's all. There is no mo. We'll see you in 30 days with more DX stuff. 73 and good DX.